Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dr. Dean. My voice may not sound like it, but it is me. Haven't had a show for a while, mainly because I've been too busy trying to get things done around here, plus my computer's been acting like an ongoing fool. I have not been out to see about getting another one, but we'll soon do that. Today's show, as long as our computer work holds up, will be on a number of topics. The first, we will have to give homage to Ellis Marsalis, a great musician, a great teacher in the field of jazz. Took place last week at the age of 81. Lived a nice, fruitful life. But along the way, let's hear what people had to say about this giant.
And has given you this music as you were growing up?
Well, I think that the most important thing about Dad is really not that he drilled us in music, but more so he made us see life in a certain way. We have a certain outlook on how we're supposed to carry ourselves in the world and how we should see other people and treat other people. But I think really has a profound effect on what we play musically. And I think that's really more important than anything that he's ever given us.
Ellis Marsalis' role as educator and student are two sides of the same thin coin. His passion for teaching, inseparable from his insatiable desire to learn, and to learn not just from his fellow scholars, but also from his students. Ellis entered the world of music education with a spirit of openness and collaboration, building bridges where before there had been blockades. He has not only shown generations of musicians how to play, he has also inspired them to live with meaning in the world.
I'm still learning myself, and even now there's things that I'm working on, because I don't really think I'm teaching jazz. It's like I think jazz education is an oxymoron.
And so within the collaborative context of the music called jazz, Ellis empowered his students to follow their own unique path toward personal success, and in doing so, transformed how the world sees jazz and jazz education. Ellis Marsalis Jr. was born on November 14, 1934, in New Orleans, to Florence and Ellis Marsalis Sr. He began formal music lessons around the age of 11, training classically on the clarinet, then adding saxophone, and finally piano by the time he finished high school. He graduated from Dillard University in 1955 with a BA in music education and worked at his father's motel while playing with the American Jazz Quintet. Out of the service, he returned home to New Orleans and married Dolores Ferdinand. With a new family to support, Ellis took on teaching jobs here and there while playing gigs at night. Teaching was not a priority at the time, but a single course that Ellis taught at Xavier University began to change that.
I began to take a different view of education, and I also began to see a need for a more formal study of what the university called African American studies. I started to begin thinking more about education, and not so much less about jazz, but a more expansive view.
Eventually, there would be six Marsalis sons. He instilled in all of them his dedication to service, to education, and to using this great American music to unite people. For all his focus on education, Ellis has never stopped playing. He's recorded almost 20 of his own albums and has been featured with everyone from David Fathead Newman to Marcus Roberts. In 2011, Marsalis and his sons were officially recognized as NEA Jazz Masters. Yet even today, at 84, Education is Ellis's greatest passion.
When it comes down to it, there's so much more music to be learned and so many more students to be taught formally and informally.
Tonight, we celebrate Ellis Marsalis Jr., a visionary musician, father, activist, and educator, and this year's recipient of Jazz at Lincoln Center's Award for Artistic Excellence.
I just wonder how you all feel about your dad and his giving you this music.
Well, we don't have to wonder any longer. What a fantastic, more than that, a great icon, a legend in the field of jazz, more importantly, in the field of teaching jazz, something that's very difficult to do. Because there's so much to learn. In any event, we'll miss him. And I made a mistake. I said he was 81. However, he was 84. And that's something I didn't realize he was that old. But more importantly, he was still a fantastic artist. That his sons will carry on his legacy. All of them are fantastic musicians, great at what they do. One who we all love and plays the trumpet, had an opportunity to do just about everything there is to do, and has gone on and made all kinds of outstanding contributions, as almost like following in his father's footsteps, being able to do all the things that he, the father, did. And I told you I didn't know exactly whether this computer of mine would function properly, because it sometimes works and it sometimes doesn't. But let's see what I'm able to pull up. I wanted to take a look at some of the attitudes and ideas that are related to people from other countries and African Americans who have gone to other countries and what they experience in those other countries, which makes it so difficult for some reason us to survive in every place except for in Africa. And one of the things that I pulled up, however, my computer is not functioning properly, is about African Americans in Canada. Because you see, Canada is a place where a lot of us go, but a lot of people don't realize at one time when slavery was going on, the Canadians had slaves also. And I wanted us to sort of take a look at that to see exactly how people were able to survive that whole problem of what black people experienced at that particular time. Let's see if I can pull something up on the computer, because my computer is saying to me, I ain't doing nothing else but you. Let's see. Slaves. And Canada. Okay. Let's see what happens. Historical catalog existed about that in Canada. There were 4,200 slaves between 1671 and 1834. You know, I always was under the impression that a lot of African Americans tried to get their freedom by going north. And we see here that that slavery not only was up north, but it was everywhere. Everybody was trying to make a profit. The year slavery was abolished in the British Empire was about 2/3 of these were native and 1/3 were blacks. The use of slaves varied a great deal throughout the course of this period. Now, there's a fantastic, if we ever get past this health situation, you want to take a trip. Take a trip to the Canadian Museum of History. Here, you're going to find a lot of things about slavery and the colonies. The issue of slavery in Canada has been long glossed over by historians and by Canadian society in general. Substantive recognition of this past history of slavery did not begin until in the 1960s. Wow. People didn't know anything about the kind of slavery, so there's always somebody who's writing a dissertation, and I'm quite sure that's how it came to fruition. Nevertheless, slavery was actively practiced in New France, both in the St. Lawrence Valley and in Louisiana. This institution, which endured for almost 2 centuries, affected the destiny of thousands of men, women, and children descended from the Abogonian and African people. It's very interesting that there would be such a thing as slavery in Canada. Slavery was introduced to New France in stages. A first slave, a young boy originally from Macedonia, in 1629, he and his brother, before leaving Quebec 3 years later, the latter sold him for the sum of 50 ecos. Now, I don't know what that is. I haven't looked that up. I don't know. I don't know if it was $50 or, I know it wasn't 50 cents. So it had to be $50. The boy soon passed into the hands of the colonialist Collier and received the name of Oliver Lee Duane and was described as a servant in the records of his burial in 1654. It is plausible that he had been manumitted by his master. In other words, renamed and brought up by them because they were boys. The exception to the side of black slavery in Canada only towards the end of the 17th century, despite colonial officials often reiterated yearnings to have African slaves reported to the colony. No slave ship ever reached the St. Lawrence Valley. Those black slaves who arrived in the region came from the neighboring British colonies from which they were smuggled or they were taken as war captives. So, as we can see, slavery, people who lived in Canada purchased slaves from this country. However, there was no ship that went into Canada and carrying slaves as they did in South Carolina, Virginia, North Carolina, and other parts like Louisiana. In Canada, the majority of slaves were not all of African, but rather of the Abogonian origination. Native politicians customarily subjugated war captives between the arrival of the French, but this practice acquired new meaning and unprecedented proportions in the context of Western expansion. Well, I think I gave you a pretty good lesson of what was going on with African Americans who actually, for no fault of their own, became slaves and were actually sold into people living in Canada. let's see if we can go back and find something else about when did slavery end? We in Canada, we know that. What is the name of the first enslaved African? We know that. How does slavery affect Canada? That's a good one. Who did slaves? Why did slaves escape to Canada? That's a very good question. Why would you go to a place where there are slaves? Well, we had free. In this country, we had free of African Americans. So they were in Boston, in that area, up in more than northern part of the United States. This act, because of the act, slave masters were able to meet to enter free northern U.S. states to reclaim escaped slaves. So, you know how you had slave breakers? You had slave people who ran after slaves and were paid for bringing them back. And so they went all the way through Canada. The outcome was an increased use of the Underground Railroad to get into Canada. George Brown founded the Anti-Slavery Society of Canada. So don't ask me who he is, because I have the faintest idea. The Underground Railroad was actually a vehicle by people helping individuals by following the North Star to the North. And of course, they did take the route to go to places like New York. They went to New Jersey. They went on up to Connecticut. And they went on to Ohio. They went over all over the place. So let's take a look further at some information here. The colonial Canada had slavery for more than 200 years. So even though people escaped to Canada, you had free black people there, as also Native Americans. So that's, here again, something that we now have to deal with. Okay, now, what I'm going to do is get out of this and see if I can pull up some additional information. The information I had was documented and was in existence for us to listen to some authorities talking about slavery. You know, African Americans, we know that Sunday is going to be Easter. And we know that our Savior, Jesus Christ, died on the cross this week and rose up from the dead on Sunday. But how many people know that when Jesus had a problem carrying that cross, that a black man from Africa felt so sorry for him and carried the cross and took some of the beating that Jesus was taking just to help Jesus get to his final demise? So I thought it might be interesting to talk about what we're experiencing and not being able to go to church. That doesn't mean that we cannot serve the Lord. Just because we're not going to church on Sunday does not take away the ability to be able to understand what the death of Jesus meant for us and why his raising up from the dead was so important. Jesus Christ was the originated founder of the Christian faith. He was, I would say, an individual that you only know anything about it until he turned a certain age. Two ages that come to mind. One age was when he was 12 years old and had to go to be registered, and went to the synagogue after he was registered, and his mother and father, Mary and Joseph, along with John the Baptist, who was his cousin, thought for sure that Jesus was with them on the way back to where they were leaving to go to. However, Jesus was at a church, what we call church. And he was there talking to some of the great religious leaders in that location at that time. They were really astounded about the ability this young man had. It was just uncanny that a person 12 years old had so much knowledge about God, the Bible, just history as it relates to the coming of himself. His mother and father got concerned when they found out he was missing and had to go back to see if they could find him. They didn't know where he was. They didn't know whether or not he, what he was. So someone, they asked around and they was told where he was. And when Jesus' mother asked him, "Why are you here? What are you doing?" And Jesus said, "I'm all about my Father's work." I find it so interesting just the last statements that Jesus made at an age of 12 years, that he could say, "I'm here to do my Father's work." Now, of course, his mother told him, "This is not the time. You're still a child," and all that good stuff. And Jesus, knowing the Ten Commandments, know that you're supposed to honor your mother and your father. So he did not leave and go out and deal with his father's work anymore until he was of age. All the information about the life of Jesus Christ between 12 to almost 28 years of age is in pieces scattered all over the universe. Not so much universe, but all Earth. And it's really difficult because, you know, most individuals really don't know what to believe when they are able to come in contact with just a little bit of what Jesus did at different ages, where he went to school, because he went to school more than just carpentry. So the question is, you know, what did he do? Some people have said that he studied with some Africans in Africa. Whereabouts in Africa? One does not know. But it also says that he also got to know where he lived very well and was always listening to what other people had to say, him not saying anything and sort of staying in the background. I remember reading something a long time ago where a person bumped into Jesus, almost knocked him down, and didn't say "excuse me" or anything, and Jesus said to himself as well as how loud was somebody else that heard him, "That'll be the last time you will ever bump into me." And the guy immediately dropped dead. Now, I don't know how true that is. I don't know, because you see, you got to understand,
Jesus was different when he got to be an older person. He was different because he was much mature. And this evidently happened when he was a teenager. They also, I remember hearing something that he also was playing on a rooftop with one of his friends and pushed his friends and friend fell off the roof and hit the ground and died. Jesus came down and at an early age brought this boy back to life. Now, I don't know how true that is, but this is something that you get in waves about the kinds of things that Jesus was able to do. Until one day, that one day when there was a wedding and they did not have any more wine, and his mother told him, "It's your time to do something." Once that happened, everything about Jesus Christ after that, we have a pretty good understanding. But we've heard over and over about him finding disciples. And then from finding those particular disciples, picking people. Even one of his brothers became one of his disciples. But the writings that you hear about Mark and Luke and John all are saying very close to the same about this man. So it couldn't be that what occurred was a lie. He was a remarkable person from my perspective. And, you know, like oftentimes when you look at the Bible and you see what ethnic group he was from, it's very interesting how when you go in a church today, black or white church, you see Jesus Christ as a Caucasian or a white person. Most Jews around that time were a darker-skinned person. That's one reason why it was very easy for Jesus to mingle with Africans. Also, the Bible tells you that he was going to have hair of wool, like wool, and skin the color of a copper tone. How could then this person be white? I don't know. I was not there to see it. I can't give you any information other than what I've been able to muster up myself. However, I don't believe I've ever seen a white person with cotton-looking hair. And I never saw anybody that was white get to be deep copper tone color. Well, let's see. I've talked to you now for a good period of time. I didn't mean for this show to only be for 30 minutes. I wanted the show to be at least an hour, but as you can see, my computer is not obliging me to provide me with the stuff I want. So there's no way in the world I'm going to stay here and just waste your time talking about things off the cuff. Remember that on Friday, our Savior died on the cross for us. He died for not just us, but all those people who came before him who committed sins. He died so we might have a direct route to heaven. He also died so that we could reconnect with God. See, once the sin occurred, the original sin, we were disconnected, like the phone was hung up. And so because of that, there was a big space of blackness, darkness. Because see, God brought light. And the light that he brought was his only begotten Son, Jesus Christ. So worship him and let God and let people know where there are three people gathered in the name of Jesus Christ and talk about Jesus Christ. You're worshiping Jesus Christ. This has been Getting It Done, and I have been your host, Dr. Walter Dean, and hopefully next week I'll be able to hook up this computer or a computer that's new. I plan on getting one. I'll transfer all of my information on to this one. I don't think I'll have it done by Friday, which is the date that I normally have my jazz show, but I'm hoping that I will have it at some time next week. So have a good day, and make sure you wash your hands and stay 7 to 6 feet or 7 feet away from other people so that this germ, this horrible germ can be defeated. Have a good day. Thank you. Bye-bye.